It is a $150 billion annual industry. It is second only to the drug trade.
Greetings and welcome to this month's edition of the FBI National Academy Associates Leadership APB podcast series. My name is Tony Bailey, and I'm the Director of Education and Training for the Association. Today's podcast is sponsored by Toughbook by Panasonic Connect. Toughbook, your reliable technology partner to get work done.
I am Marcus Claycomb. I work in the public sector team in North America for Panasonic Connect Toughbook, and I'm also a proud graduate of Session 273. Toughbook has been delivering rugged, reliable, cutting-edge technology for almost 30 years. It is our privilege and our pleasure. Stay safe.
Our topic for today's episode is TAT, Helping Agencies Combat Human Trafficking. Today, we will be featuring Kyla Lanier, the Deputy Director and Senior Director of Public Sector of Engagement for TAT. Kyla Lanier is the Deputy Director and Senior Director of Public Sector Engagement for Truckers Against Trafficking, known as TAT, a 501c3 organization that exists to educate, equip, empower, and mobilize members of the trucking, bus, and energy industries to combat domestic sex trafficking. She is responsible for implementation of vision, public sector engagement, training, and national promotion of the organization. She speaks on human trafficking at conferences, in the media, universities, industry meetings, and makes operational decisions for TAT. She is responsible for TAT's global expansion, implementation of TAT's programming, including the Iowa Motor Vehicle Enforcement Model and pertinent legislation in all 50 states. And she conducts in-depth law enforcement training around the nation. She consults with international agencies that seek to replicate TAT's model and instructs audiences on best practices for engaging with trafficking victims. Ms. Lanier has been involved in the fight against human trafficking since 2007, when she helped initiate the State Coalition Against Trafficking in Oklahoma. In addition to her human trafficking work, she has authored a book called My Life Crazy about her experiences working with gangs in El Salvador in the mid-1990s. She was also named the Broken Arrow Public Schools District Teacher of the Year in 2011. It's my pleasure to introduce our friend, Director Kyla Lanier. Welcome, Kyla. It's great to have you joining us on today's podcast.
It's fantastic to be here. Thank you so much for the invitation, Tony.
Absolutely. We know that the United States recognizes two primary forms of trafficking in persons, forced labor and sex trafficking. We also know that it's not just a local state or even just a United States issue. More than 180 nations globally have joined in the fight to prevent, suppress, and even punish human trafficking. So, Kyla, what is the scope of human trafficking?
Yeah, I mean, human trafficking is happening in every nation of the world. And as you mentioned, it is happening in the forms of labor trafficking or sex trafficking. And how we see labor trafficking in the United States is in a lot of the industries that we do know about, agriculture and construction, but it's also heavily in nail salons where people go and get their manis and pedis done. It is in the traveling sales crews that come through our neighborhoods selling magazine subscriptions or cleaning products. You see it with traveling carnivals and fairs, a lot of labor trafficking victims there. We're seeing it in domestic labor, nannies, cooks, maids. You see it with in fisheries and in factories and in sweatshops. So it is basically everywhere that you can imagine. And then on sex trafficking side, we see it in the commercial sex industry with prostitution, brothels, both the legal ones as well as the illegal ones, those illicit massage businesses where they offer a happy ending. Almost always you have a trafficking victim there. But we also see it in the legal commercial sex industry. And that's going to be in strip clubs as well as in pornography. We hear from a lot of survivors that their traffickers would take them to clubs, make them strip on stage, and then the traffickers were in the audience making dates for them that they would have to then go and perform those sex acts later. Also in the production of porn, we see it used throughout the trafficking experience. Traffickers use porn to desensitize and train their victims. You hear from survivors that Johns show them the kinds of, you know, more of the violent, vile acts from pornography that they want to act out on them. And then we also know that a lot of their exploitation is filmed and uploaded onto these sites. And so pornography is literally rampant throughout the trafficking industry or crime, I really should say. When we look at the stats on this, it is $150 billion annual industry. So it is second only to the drug trade. You can sell the person over and over and over. And so traffickers are going to where the money is, whether it's that street level pimp that's running two or three victims, you know, very low overhead, very high profit margin, or it's that factory owner that can sell her t-shirts for less money if she doesn't pay her workers, or it's that big transnational crime organization that's running guns, drugs, and people. They're definitely going to where the money is. We know that it's happening in all 50 states, including DC. The National Human Trafficking Hotline has received calls from each of our states of both labor and sex trafficking. And literally 50 million people are enslaved in the world today. 50 million. And so that is just a staggering number. But when we bring it back to the United States, when we're looking at runaways, foster youth, kids from middle class to parent homes, it literally is anybody with a vulnerability, because that's what traffickers are seeking to exploit, our vulnerabilities. And we all have them to some degree, but young people have a lot of them because they want to be loved, they want to be accepted, they want freedom and things. And then you have people that are coming from, you know, exploitative backgrounds, abusive backgrounds, deprived backgrounds, and traffickers are meeting their basic needs. They're coming in and they're saying, I'll be your family. And for a while, they do act as a good family member until they get that trauma bond developed. And we know that it is disproportionately happening more to minority women and girls. The sex trafficking side is, for sure. And so you have, the numbers are just skewed. So Black and brown bodies are being used at higher rates, and they're also being arrested for the crime of prostitution versus being offered services. And we know that a victim might be forced to have sex up to 20 times a day. And that's a nice euphemism, isn't it? They're having sex up to 20 times a day, but they're being raped up to 20 times a day. Just because money exchanges hands does not mean the act is consensual. And I've worked with hundreds of survivors around this country, and they would all tell you that while they were being exploited, they were like, oh man, I'm choosing this. This is how I do, you know, like I get paid for what other people give away for free. And they got that attitude and they've got that persona. But that is because they're hiding the traumatized, broken person inside. That is that survival instinct that's kicking in there. And so those are just some of those stats on this crime.
That's incredible. You know, I was kind of taken back by the $150 billion a year. But I think what is the most concerning to me is 50 million people.
Yes.
That's staggering.
Yes.
Well, knowing the scope of this and how broad it is, and I guess there's really nowhere you can hide from it. Why is it essential for law enforcement to be trained on human trafficking? I mean, coming from a law enforcement background and even working investigations, why is it so important to be trained specifically on human trafficking?
The reason why law enforcement are critical, absolutely critical in combating this crime, is because you're the only people with enforcement powers in our society. You're the only people that can actually step in and remove somebody from their situation. Legally, you can actually get the trafficker and the buyers, who are just as guilty as the traffickers, quite frankly, get them and arrest them and take them away and get the person that's being exploited out of that situation. Nobody else has that ability without possibly crossing some boundary or doing something. Like, law enforcement absolutely are critical. And we know that there are specific ways, you know, that guard is up heavily with trafficking victims and law enforcement. So we try to teach how to effectively break through those barriers using a victim-centered approach, really a trauma-informed approach, and getting to that person and showing some of those basic human kindness, but like asking about just like, have you had anything to drink today? Would you like some water? Have you had anything to eat? Because traffickers, I mean, it's just sort of a standard that they don't feed them on a daily basis. They don't, you know, let them sleep enough. They are sleep deprived. They're hungry. They're thirsty. They are beaten down. When an officer can step in, make that human connection, they're the ones that have the greatest chance of getting a victim out of that life. And so it is critical that you know what the crime looks like, because it's going to present like a crime. like they're the criminal. The victim looks like a criminal most of the time, right? Whether they are undocumented and being exploited in a field, or it is a sex trafficking victim that looks like a prostitute, that's talking like a prostitute, looking like, acting like, talking like they want to be there, in fact, being forced. And so recognizing the crime, understanding the dynamics of the crime, and then understanding how to approach a victim and to build these cases. Again, the only people that really have a chance of getting traffickers off the street and getting victims out of this situation are law enforcement.
I can see why that's very important, why law enforcement officers need to be trained in that. Some of the ways to detect and maybe take that investigation just a step further to see. We know it's essential for law enforcement to be trained. I was noticing something about TAT. You guys actually provide this training for law enforcement officers all across, not just in this nation, but globally.
Yeah. So we started with commercial vehicle enforcement within the state patrols around the countries because we were working in the beginning only with the trucking industry. And so commercial vehicle enforcement were like our perfect law enforcement entry point. But then as TAT expanded the industries that we worked with and the sectors that we were working with, we had more and more invitations to come out and do mixed agencies, different law enforcement entities. And so we began to really just try to teach what it actually looks like and how to have the best chance of getting somebody out of the life. That's what we've been doing in-person training since 2000 and gosh, what was it? 16, I think, was our first one. And we were going pretty strong. I don't think I was home a whole lot. I was constantly training. But what we worked on all throughout last year, and we were able to offer it, and we are offering this free of charge to any law enforcement officer or law enforcement agency, are on-demand modules. We heard that with funding decreases, with a shortage of law enforcement officers, it was hard to pull everybody off the road to come in to sit down and do a training. And so they said, can you create something that's on-demand that we can offer? And so we have come up with 5 different training modules, and they can be taken all together as a series. They can be mixed and matched, or you can just take one. It doesn't really matter. They're all self-contained. We have gotten them certified, each one of them certified individually through iAtalyst. The first one is Human Trafficking 101. The second one is Engaging Trafficking Victims Best Practices. That's the longest one. It's 2 hours, but that one is probably one of the most critical ones, I would say. The third one is Human Trafficking Indicators at Interdiction Stops with Case Studies. The fourth one is Unlikely Allies, the importance of the commercial vehicle industry in combating this crime. And then the fifth one is Addressing Demand, No Buyer Equals No Victim. And in each one of the modules, we have law enforcement officers speaking, we have survivors of human trafficking speaking, we have TAT trainers, as well as victim advocates. And so you're getting that sort of multidisciplinary approach and expertise in each one of these modules. And all you have to do is write us at le@tatnonprofit.org, and we will happily send you either the link on our LMS, or if you want it for your agency and you want the SCORM files, we can send you the SCORM files and you guys can host it yourselves.
That's incredible. That's a huge benefit, because there's really not that much training out there regarding this issue. So that's great that you guys are offering that program. So we know how important law enforcement is in combating human trafficking. Can you share with us a case where, maybe a law enforcement officer actually made a routine stop where human trafficking was detected?
Yeah, he's one of my favorite officers, Sergeant Zach Hurd out of Illinois, Illinois State Police. He pulled over a pickup truck that was speeding. And when he got up on the pickup truck, he said it was a male driver and a female passenger. And he noticed that the female passenger's body language was really weird. He said she was pressed up against the side of the truck and she was acting like, "I'm not with him." That was what her body language was reading like. "I'm not with this guy." Guy was really courteous, really polite, had his ID, had his insurance, all of that, gave it to Zach. But when he was talking to Zach, he moved his foot and there was some drug paraphernalia that he had under his foot. And when he moved it, Sergeant Hurd obviously saw that. And so he asked him to step out of the vehicle to do a search of the car, do a search of the pickup. And he found a ton of marijuana, like pounds and pounds of marijuana in the search of the pickup. So he then calls in, the officers that, take over the drug detectives. So they come to the scene And he goes over to talk to the female, because another thing that he had noticed in addition to her body language was she had a tattoo that covered the entirety of her arm, and it was in Spanish. Now, Sergeant Hurd happens to speak some Spanish, and I fluctuate between calling him Sergeant Hurd and Zach. I apologize, but like, I know him as Zach, but he speaks Spanish, and he was very concerned about the tattoo. So he went over to the side of the pickup truck to talk to her after the other officers were ripping apart the pickup truck and had the guy in handcuffs, and he addressed her in Spanish. She did not speak Spanish. And he was like, because this tattoo covered her whole arm. He said, so can you tell me about the tattoo? And she got immediately embarrassed, dropped her head, turned red, like was just really upset, flustered. And she was like, the first two letters are my dad's initials. Second two letters are my mom's initials. And he could see she was uncomfortable, and it was not initials. It was three distinct words. And so he goes, hey, don't worry about that. Don't worry about that. Now, I always say this is not how I would tell you to start a conversation with a trafficking victim, but based on her tattoo, he did go straight into it. And he said, look, I think when people get into the life and, you know, they're in prostitution for some reasons, it's because something really bad's happened or they're being forced into it. And she just immediately burst into tears and started to tell her story to him. And he was asking questions and was really compassionate and was like, I'm not, you know, he was very clear, like, I don't judge that. Like, I want to help you. And was like offering her services. And he kept saying, is this guy hurting you? Now, she stopped short each time at naming the driver of the pickup truck. Sergeant Hurd goes back around to the other detectives and he's like, I think you have a human trafficking case and not just a drug trafficking case. And they're like, that's not what we are here for. You know, they towed the pickup truck, they took the guy in and they left. And he's on the side of the road with this lady. And so he's still talking to her and he's like, if you'll just tell me it's him, like, we'll arrest him for that. We'll get you services, all of that. And she's like, I'm just so tired. I want to get home. She was from Atlanta. She's like, I just want to go home. They'd been driving from California. They were in Illinois. So, I mean, they'd been on the road a while. And she's like, I just want to sleep. And he's like, what can I do for you right now? And she said, well, I found a hotel a few exits up. If you could take me there, I'd really appreciate that. So he gets her in the car. He's talking to her the whole way. She's still crying. She's telling him stuff. They get there and he's like, are you sure I can't help you? And she's like, you've helped enough. I just need to sleep. I need to think. I need to go home. And he goes, okay, well, here's my number. I've got your number. If you change your mind, let me know. I always say if that case ended right there, Zach did everything right. He showed compassion. He asked her questions. He helped her in that moment with a very tangible need that she needed. But that's not where it ended. He calls me 2 days later and he's upset. He's been thinking about it. He's like, he's upset. And he's like, I feel like maybe I did something wrong. I feel like she was right there. And maybe if I had asked the right question or said the right thing. And I was like, it's not you, man. Like this, it just takes a while. And he goes, do you think one of the survivors can talk to her that's on our staff? So I was like, absolutely. But I said, you're going to have to call her. We can't cold call her. You're going to have to call her and see if she wants to talk to her. So Zach calls her this 2 days later. She picks up immediately and was like, hi, Sergeant Hurd. Like immediately. So what did that show? He built rapport, right? Because she could have blocked that number. She didn't have to pick up a, you know, Illinois number. She picked it up and she talked to him and he explained, hey, this survivor wants to talk to you. And she's like, yeah, sure, she can call me. So they had a long conversation and she said, I really just want to get home to Atlanta. Can you find me service providers in Atlanta? So we compiled a big list of, you know, places that would help her and had another call with her and gave her that list. And she was like, thank you. And when she got home, she was able to connect herself to services. And I like to tell that story because I think there's a lot of Zach Hurds out there. I think there's a lot of people that honestly, they know something's wrong. They know trafficking's taking place or, you know, some other thing is happening and they are doing everything right, but they're blaming themselves because it didn't really happen. But I always just want to point out every victim of trafficking is like in a deep, dark pit. And every kind act by an officer is like a ladder rung thrown down into that pit. And you might be the very first rung in that ladder. So you might not be able to see even the gleam of it if you could look down into that pit. But what you're also not seeing is that hand that just grabbed a hold. And they are climbing their way out because of these acts by law enforcement officers. And as I said, I've worked with trafficking survivors all across this country. And it's interesting, especially the ones that write books later, they always talk about the law enforcement officers. And it's not the ones that are like, oh, he saved me. It's the ones, they'll say stuff like, you get whole chapters. He bought me an ice cream cone on July 4th. He saw me throwing up and he asked me if I was okay. He gave me a bottle of water. They remember that. They remember that. They catalog it because it so stands out and it so matters. And so to every law enforcement officer listening to this, I would just tell you what you do matters on every level. But within this crime, it has ripple effects that maybe you will not see, but it is so important. And that is why we love to partner with you all. We have created these trainings for you because we know that you are absolutely the front lines.
Officers oftentimes interact with people and they really don't know the depth of their compassion or their actions can have on a person's life, even down the road. And so I guess that kind of goes back to our previous conversation of why training is so important, understanding the actual nuances and dealing with these trafficking victims that help you pick up on key indicators like that. So great story. Aside the incredible training that you offer and the services that you provide for victims and things, you know, what else should we let our members know about TAT and your mission specifically?
Yeah, so we recognize that, you know, truck drivers are the eyes and ears of our nation's highways, right? They see things other people don't see. And at any given time, there's more professional drivers on the road than there are law enforcement. And so if they could recognize the realities of this crime and the indicators of this crime and make those calls to law enforcement, victims would be recovered. And we started to see that over and over and over. And that allowed us to expand into the bus industry. We have industry-specific trainings for over-the-road truck drivers, local drivers that include like Amazon and FedEx delivery, rideshare, USPS, food delivery. We have training for movers and in-home delivery to disrupt those residential brothels and familial trafficking victims that are being trafficked out of their own bedrooms a lot of times. We have training for transit and motor coach. You think about all the runaways that, you know, take buses to get out of the city and or that traffickers are putting people on, or they're meeting somebody online and getting a bus ticket to go and meet them in another state. If every bus terminal worker was trained on this, if every bus driver was trained on this, you're going to prevent trafficking from happening. And then you think of school transportation, and we have training for that. So many kids in this country are being trafficked by family members. They go to school during the day and they're trafficked at night, on the weekends, and on holidays. And if school bus drivers were trained to recognize the changes in behavior, these kids are going to be recovered that much sooner and get out of this hell that they're living. We also were approached by the energy industry because of the trucking intersect, and they asked us to create training for everyone in the energy sector. So we have that training as well. So we work with state agencies, DMVs, DOTs, state patrols, law enforcement across the country and throughout Canada. And then we also have all of these industry sectors that we work with.
That's a very big mission that you have there.
Yes.
But incredible work that you're doing. And I can tell you that this topic isn't going away anytime soon, unfortunately. And it's going to take more people like you and more organizations like TAT to help us combat this global issue that we're facing. Kyla, I really appreciate you coming on. I thank you so much for your time and sharing this incredible information with us. I know you've got a busy schedule. So we really appreciate you coming on with us today.
This is my pleasure. This is my audience. So thank you so much for this opportunity. And please do contact us if you all would like to receive these trainings. The email is LE for law enforcement, LE at TAT, T-A-T, nonprofit.org.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I appreciate that. Well, this concludes this episode of our Leadership APB podcast. Thanks again to our sponsor, Toughbook by Panasonic Connect. Toughbook, your reliable technology partner to get work done. Please join us again next month for another edition of our FBI NAA Leadership APB podcast series. Until then, stay safe and be well.